What is up, and welcome back to another episode of the Wizards Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Finberg, and today's episode, we're going to be dissecting the second day of the NBA draft. If you're looking for my thoughts on the Wizards taking Trey Johnson at 6, Will Riley at 21 from Wednesday's round 1, that's also on my channel on YouTube. It's on Apple and Spotify, about 30 minutes breaking those picks down, so be on the lookout for that. But we're going to be talking about Jameer Watkins out of FSU today. That's what we're going to lead the show with. But we got a lot of other topics that I want to dive into. I want to talk about Chris Middleton obviously opting into his contract and how that affects some of the other roster decisions that Washington has down the line. I've had a lot of questions about the obvious lack of front court, being that the Wizards didn't draft a forward slash center in this draft, even though it is a need. I had a lot of questions about that, so I'm going to, answer those hopefully, in the later part of this episode. I've had some questions about the Wizards' possible depth chart, roster going into next season, so I want to touch on those and some other topics as well. But to start the show, I want to talk and sort of introduce to Wizards fans the number 43 pick in the 2025 NBA draft, Jameer Watkins. 23 years old, 6'5", without shoes, 215 pounds out of Florida State. Some consider him a guard. I consider him to be a wing as well, depending on where the Wizards play him. But what you need to know about him is he's a stout on-ball defender. This is a guy at the NBA Draft Combine that had 5 steals in his scrimmage there, completely dominated defensively against prospects in his draft class. Was a really good on-ball defender at Florida State. He kind of led the press. You saw with the Pacers where they would pick up half court with Nembhard and Nesmith. Watkins did that most games at Florida State, and he'd pretty consistently come away with steals. He's a really nagging defender. He's going to poke the ball free, really good ball instincts and defensive IQ to go along with a stronger build, a good build for a guard slash wing in the NBA, but certainly drafted, I would say, in large part due to what he could be on the defensive end as a wing coming into the league. But he can also score the basketball. 18.4 points per game, 5.7 rebounds, 2.4 assists in his final season at FSU. 42% from the field, 32% from three again. Not a clip to go home and talk about, but again, it's also not a terrible clip. It shows that he is, a willing three-point shooter, a capable three-point shooter at times. And so certainly the shot has a ways to go, but that's not too much of a concern or a liability for me. 74% from the line. So again, not going to jump off the page as a shooter, but has shown an ability, obviously, to score the ball. 18 points per game in the ACC is not easy, and he did that on FSU. But I think the major reason for taking him at 43 is certainly that defense. He had games as well where he scored the ball. I posted highlights from a game against Rice, I believe, where he had 30 points on 7 of 14 from the field. He had several games of 25-plus points, and another one, 26 points on the road, I believe, against Louisville. So, certainly has scoring pop. I don't foresee him in that role in the NBA. I foresee him as, a guy that's going to be a really good defender, can maybe take away, a tough assignment, a tough matchup on the opposing team. And if he adds a three-point shot, that would be great. I saw a lot of comps to Lu Dort in the pre-draft process. A lot of Wizards fans compared him to Lu Dort. I mean, without Lu Dort, the Thunder don't win the finals. They might not even beat the Nuggets, considering how big he was in that Game 5 home win. So if that's a comp that I see, that's a great comp. That's somebody that obviously the Wizards were looking at. But again, before this, I had mentioned when I drafted or when I tweeted out some of the players that I thought could be available in this range. Certainly Ryan Kalkbrenner, 7'2" center out of Creighton. Vlad Goldin, both older players, but Goldin, another 7-footer out of Michigan. Those were two centers that I thought Washington could look to target. And obviously, going into this, I figured Will Dawkins would be looking at BPA. I didn't know how high he would be on those two guys, but I certainly thought that based on BPA slash fit, Kalkbrenner certainly made sense. Maybe Goldin would have been too much of a reach. Again, he went undrafted. But Kalkbrenner ends up not being the pick. Charlotte takes him at 34. And then I kind of, switched over to Maxime Reynaud out of Stanford, a really good scoring forward, 7-footer as well. He ends up going 42 again. Another instance of the pick before, consensus among Wizards Twitter seemed to to be Reno there would have been, you know, a pretty intriguing pick to pair in that front court alongside Sarr. You know, Reno, obviously a capable three-point shooter as well, but the Kings snag him up a pick before the Wizards. Kind of deja vu, right? Because a lot of Wizards fans wanted Yoan Berenguer at 18. He ends up going at 17. Obviously, Washington ended up trading back. A lot of Wizards fans wanted Ace Bailey at six. He ends up going one pick before at five. So another instance of that happening. So pretty funny there. And also, I'll touch on Watkins a little more again in a second. But it's so fascinating, and a lot of people notice this, that for all four times the Wizards, I guess, technically drafted a player, ESPN cut to commercial, which is, it's phenomenal. They always do it to the Commanders, but they continue to do it to the Wizards. Right before they drafted at six, they went to commercial. I'm pretty sure before they drafted at 18, even though it wasn't their pick, they again went to commercial because the Wizards technically made the pick. Same goes for 21. Same goes for obviously number 40, number 43. Like every single time the Wizards were on the clock, they cut to commercial. And I don't know if that's just a coincidence or if it's just blatant disrespect. But when it happens, you know, one or two times, then sure. But every single time the Wizards are meant to be making a selection, that's what happens. It gets to a point where it's pretty ridiculous. You know, if the Lakers were picking next, I certainly don't believe that ESPN would cut to commercial. Same goes for a team like the New York Knicks and big markets like that. But it's just, and again, it's a non-issue, right? Like it really doesn't mean anything in like the grand scheme of things. But at the same time, it's just kind of funny that it continues to happen to the Wizards, especially when if you're a Commanders fan, you know it happens literally, you know, every single NFL draft. So again, a lot of Wizards fans caught on to that. I thought it was pretty funny that I persistently saw that. I also thought that ESPN's draft coverage was horrible. I don't know if you guys listening would agree with me, but I just thought it was terrible. And ESPN continues to struggle to put together good, competent NBA coverage. Like the NBA Finals coverage, apart from like Scott Van Pelt, I thought was horrible. I thought the commentary wasn't great. I thought the pre and post game shows, you know, I just muted the TV because I didn't even want to hear the guys talk. But the stark contrast between the NFL draft and the NBA draft is unbelievable. The NFL draft, these guys, you know, who they have on the panel for ESPN, ABC, they know ball. They know these guys that are entering. They do their research. They study up on them. And they can talk about each and every player all the way through to the seventh round for days. They have so many facts and cool information and insight on these guys. And then you flash forward to ESPN. They have Jonathan Givony, who I think does an okay job as their lead draft analyst. I certainly, you know, think the NFL guys like Mel Kiper do a lot of a better job, Jordan Reed as well. But he's okay. And apart from him, he's like the only guy that actually can break down these prospects for an extended period of time, actually knows and does research on them. And that's from the panel they had today. You know, Brian Windhorst, and he self-admittedly said he doesn't, that's not his job, right? Windhorst is a general NBA guy. He's not the draft guy. You know, he doesn't know really anything about the prospects, and yet he's on the panel. Bobby Marks is their like front office guy. He's on the panel. He added really nothing when it comes to the prospects. Bob Myers, again, he's like the GM to add the perspective. He didn't know really anything about the guys apart from the handed notes that they gave to him. The only other guy on the panel that knew what he's talking about is Jay Billis, because this is his job to basically go on there, and he covers college basketball, so he knows those guys. But again, I just, you know, I thought that the general coverage was lacking. I muted it, honestly, for the most part, until the actual pick was made, until Givony gave a little like spiel afterwards. I don't know if you guys agree. It's just a little side rant. But again, like I really think they'd benefit from having a panel of four or five, you know, analysts that can talk ball, that know these prospects, versus one expert, one guy that knows a lot of the college players, and then three other people that don't know what they're talking about when it comes to the draft. So that's just kind of a little aside. But I'll get back to Watkins now, because I want to share some quotes that I'm kind of stumbling across on Twitter. I got one from my guy Bijan Todd. Actually, this one's from Chase Hughes. But he tweeted out that Will Dawkins said this of second round pick Jameer Watkins, quote, "He had a pretty rare combination for us of physicality on both ends," end quote. That's kind of what I try to talk about earlier when it came to a guy like Watkins, you know, physical guard that can really defend on ball, can, you know, project as a good perimeter defender. Obviously, that's something that you know, that the Wizards are looking for. And Josh Robbins actually just tweeted this out from Will Dawkins on Jameer Watkins. Quote, "I would say he is as mature and as competitive as a player we had come through the building. He had a pretty rare combination for us of physicality on both ends. He's got the size, he's got length, he's got versatility, he competes. Sitting down in my office talking to him, he's a serious person." So you know, that's a pretty glowing quote from Dawkins on Watkins, basically saying, you know, the size, the skill set defensively seems like a serious player. And that's been a common theme. You know, Will Dawkins seems to like these high character guys, these players that want to be in Washington. He said that Will Riley and Trey Johnson, one of the things that stood out to Will Dawkins during their pre-draft process was those guys that, you know, expressed a want to be in Washington. I'm sure the same can be said for a guy like Jameer Watkins. And that's always great. You know, even Ace Bailey that didn't get taken by the Wizards, the fact that he was trying to force his way there shows that it's kind of a changing of the times. You know, how shocked would you have been, you know, a couple years ago when a guy actually wanted to get drafted to the Wizards? Like, you would have told the person that told you that they were insane or that they were lying. But clearly guys covet the way that the Wizards, you know, give their rookies opportunities to make mistakes, but to also learn and grow and gain experience. They know that they're going to develop in Washington. They know that there's going to be at least a developmental plan and pathway forward for them in Washington. I think that's why Johnson and Riley wanted to be there. That's probably why Watkins wanted to be there. It's why Ace Bailey wanted to be there instead of a place like Utah and Charlotte. So definitely a changing of the times. I personally like the Jameer Watkins selection. A lot of people, again, if you're not high on Watkins, if you're not high on Riley, and that seems to be the consensus, right? Like, Wizards fans, for the most part, are pretty happy with Trey Johnson falling at 6. What they haven't been able to get behind is Riley at 21 and Watkins at 43. I honestly think that you can just chalk it up to the fact that Wizards fans, or the ones that are mad at least, wanted a forward slash center. Because the Wizards, yes, you know, they have a lot of really good depth at guard, and they have good depth at the wing position. But where they are lacking, you know, truth be told, is in the front court. They have Alex Sarr. They traded for Kelly Olynyk. And apart from that, they really don't have anybody else on this roster. You know, I'll break this down in a bit, but, you know, Rashawn Holmes only has $250,000 guaranteed for the following year. Anthony Gill, nothing guaranteed. They can let him go for free. So those are kind of two guys, you know, that could play the forward slash center position. And again, they really don't have much guarantee. The Wizards, I would expect to probably at least let one of them walk, maybe even both. And so, yes, I understand that you want Reynaud, or you want to trade up for Kalkbrenner, or you want a Vlad Golden at 43. I understand that. Or maybe you wanted Ason Newell at 21. Like, I certainly understand it. I also would have liked Newell at 21. But the Wizards are clearly prioritizing their best player available, whether that's a guard, that's a wing, that's a forward, or a center. They're prioritizing just taking talent. And newsflash, right, for all the people that were against some of the Wizards picks. You got all those people in my comments saying, but Greg, the Wizards didn't draft the center. But Greg, the Wizards didn't draft the big forward. But Greg, how are they going to play someone alongside Sarr? Because I think he's a forward. And you have all these people that are just pissed off because they didn't draft for fit. And I try to stress this pretty much the entirety of the pre-draft process leading up to the draft. The Wizards have won 31 games over the last two seasons. I'm going to say that again. Sorry, 33 games. The Wizards are 33-131 over the last two seasons. They don't have a guard problem. They don't have a wing problem. They don't have a center problem. They have a talent problem. They have a talent problem. And anywhere you can get talent, no matter how many guards, wings, or forwards you have, that is what you need to do, especially in this process of the rebuild, at this point in the rebuild. They need talent. They need to accumulate and acquire talent. And they did that in this draft. Whether you like it or not, whether you wanted to center there or not, they added talent. It will be seen whether this talent develops and you know, who out of the logjam of guards and wings they have thrives and does well in their minutes to earn a spot when this team ultimately tries to contend in the future. But again, drafting for fit now, especially on a Wizards team that, again, top eight protected pick next year. Bottom four record guarantees they keep it. I would assume they probably want that pick in a really good draft class. Why on earth would they be trying to fill needs now? Why on earth would they realistically give two? Why would they care? I don't want to curse. Sorry. I've had some people tell me not to curse here. Why would the Wizards care about, oh, well, you don't have a center next year. That means you're not going to be able to compete for a play-in spot in the Eastern Conference. Like, they don't care about that. I do agree, right? They do need to address that glaring hole on their roster. Like, if you expect Dalek Sar to play the four, you need a steady five. I don't think Olynyk will be a guy they view as a long-term fit, obviously, and someone that maybe won't even start next year. But maybe he's good for a backup big. You do need help on the glass. You do need help on the interior, and they will address that. There are free agents out there that Washington could sign. Again, nobody thought the Wizards would sign Jonas Valanciunas last year. They did. He was pretty solid in his minutes, and they flipped him at the deadline for 2 second-round picks. They will sign somebody in free agency. They will sign probably an undrafted free agent, maybe to a two-way at the forwards left center position. But if you're sitting here and you're a Wizards fan and you're crying because they didn't draft the forward slash center, and the reason you're crying is because next year they're going to get killed on the glass and they're not going to win as many games as you want them to win, like, newsflash, dude, they aren't in that mode. They're not in the plug-in holes mode to win now. Like, they are in the process of acquiring as much talent as they can, and that's what they did in this draft, by drafting the best player available at all phases of the draft, in round one and in round two. So, look, yes, if you're mad at that they drafted all wings and guards, especially when they had a glaring need in the front court, sure, I'm not going to tell you that you're wrong in that assessment. Where I will tell you you're wrong is where you're looking to plug in holes now on a team that's, you know, generally just needs talent wherever they can get it. So that'd be my response to that. That was kind of the biggest, you know, if you didn't give them a good grade in this draft, you really probably didn't do it because you didn't like Trey Johnson. You did it maybe not even because you didn't like Will Riley or Watkins. You know, you didn't give them a good grade because you thought that they didn't draft the position that you thought they needed. And I think the real glaring issue with that, you know, I guess take on the draft or ideology about the Wizards draft is I don't think they needed to even consider fit. They just need to consider talent. So I want to move on from that. I want to kind of give my grade. Actually, I'll talk about one of the undrafted free agents real quick that the Wizards signed. Chris Haynes reported that the Washington Wizards signed undrafted free agent out of St. John's, Kaderi Richmond. Again, this is an older prospect, and the Wizards have targeted with today's draft. You know, Watkins, 23, will turn 24 on July 6th. Kaderi Richmond, obviously up there in age at 23, 6'6", 205-pound wing, I should say. Maybe you can see him playing an on-ball guard. That's kind of what he did, you know, some ball handling responsibilities at St. John's. But 2024-25 stats, 12.5 points per game, 6 rebounds, 5 assists. So stuff the stat sheet. You know, a good rebounder when it comes to a player of his size at 6'5", 6'6". Strong rebounder, like I said, good playmaker. You saw with those assists, but he is a very poor shooter. 17% from the three-point line. His shot, if you watch it, it doesn't look pretty, really. But I guess this is a guy that they're counting on playmaking. Maybe, you know, a two-way. I would assume, right, we'll get into the roster space in a bit, but I would assume this is a two-way contract type of deal, or an Exhibit 10 deal, which would mean kind of a training camp invite for Richmond. Possibly a summer league spot, I would assume as well. But, you know, the 17% from three, 53% from the free throw line, 48% from the field. He's not a gifted shooter. He doesn't have the greatest touch, but he can get to his spots. He can create for others. He can rebound. Again, like I said, likely a two-way or an Exhibit 10 deal. I'm sure we'll see more of those deals going through. I'm not sure if the Wizards will be too active in that market, considering all the young talent they already have. But wanted to make sure that the Wizards fans were introduced to Richmond. So, if you want to know my thoughts on Johnson and Riley in greater depth, I talked about it in the last episode. Obviously, I'm very excited about Watkins. I'm really always a big fan of plus defenders that are tenacious on that end, hang their hat on that end buy into that role. I think Watkins can be someone that does that, and he can score the ball, 18 points per game in the ACC. So that's the guy that I'm glad they were able to get good value for at 43. But if you're asking, you know, Greg, how would you grade the Wizards 2025 draft? I'd give it a strong A minus. I could maybe be convinced to a B plus, but I'm gonna stick firm there with my grade of an A minus. And there's a few reasons for that. Number one, and again, I'll preface this with it's my grade, so it based on my draft board, that's how it's gonna be. So hopefully you can understand that your grade's gonna be different from mine based on how you evaluate the players. But my grade is an A minus in part, number one, because the Wizards stayed put, didn't give up any assets. I didn't think they should overpay to move up. I'm glad they didn't. Stayed put at number six and drafted number three prospect on my board in Trey Johnson, a really gifted scorer that can get to his spots. Elite movement shooter, a top five shooter in this draft by far. 40% from three in the SEC. Led the SEC in scoring as a freshman. Led his team in Texas to the tournament. Just an overall tremendous freshman campaign. Now, there are downsides. He wasn't great on defense. Again, he mentioned that Will Dawkins showed him plays where he lacked effort. He took plays off, and he said he took that to heart. So hopefully, you know, Trey Johnson can figure it out on that end. He was asked at the combine, what's your biggest weakness? He said, it's my defense, and I know that. So at least he's self-aware, something that he can work on. But I really like the player. I also like the character. You know, he told Chase Hughes at the combine, you know, I don't really do anything outside of hooping. Like, I play basketball, I talk to my friends, I read books, and I listen to music. And apart from that, that's it. You can find me in the gym. And that's the guy that I like. I like a guy that knows or that loves just like working on his craft. That's someone that, you know, isn't just getting to the league to get to the league. Like, they really are serious about their craft. They're serious about perfecting it and getting better. And that's someone being in the gym as much as he is that I think can thrive and develop and get better. Because you can only give a guy, as you know, so many resources to get better. If they don't want to be there or they don't have that drive or passion, they're not going to reach that pinnacle. But Johnson clearly seems like a guy who's really serious about that craft and serious about developing. So apart from the overall talent, the character is something that I'm a big, big fan on. So really happy with that pick. I like the Riley selection. You know, I would have preferred to take Asa Newell. Like, there were probably three to four guys that I had ranked above Will Riley there at 21. But the fact that they were able to move back three slots, pick up another pick, and eventually get Watkins in this draft after trading out of it with the pool trade, pick up 2031 and 2032 second rounders. I know those kids are what, like 11 years old, maybe 10 years old at this point, and you're saying, Greg, second rounders are worth nothing. They are worth something. You can trade up with second rounders. You can trade for veterans at the deadline with them. They are not worthless, like some people have commented at me numerous times. But I like the trade back, at least to get the all, you know, 3 seconds for a three pick move back is a really good trade for me. And again, I understand the Riley pick. You know, 6'8" wing, showing the ability to knock down the three ball. Percentages weren't great, but I'm not too concerned there. Has to add some size to a really slender frame. But I get the pick with another high upside wing. You know, Keyshawn George was a high upside wing that they took last year, and look how that worked out. So pretty intrigued about Will Riley. And then you get to Watkins, and I talked about him earlier, but I really like the fact that they went BPA there. They took a defensive-minded guard/wing, someone that I think could really be a difference maker on this team. So, you know, a team that wants to be good on the defensive end, you need really good bought-in defenders. And it seems like Watkins is someone that can come into the league and just say, you know what, I'm going to be a great defender. I can score the ball and hopefully my shot develops, but I'll always be able to provide that defensively. And that's someone I like, that tenacious on-ball defender that can get up into your grill and rip the ball away, force havoc on that end. You know, really intriguing there. So I'd give it an A-. I've seen a lot of people lower on it, and I think if you're lower on it, I don't know if you're more upset about who the Wizards drafted versus the positions that they decided to draft or lack thereof by foregoing, you know, forward/center, which was, you know, I'm not going to lie, a need for this team, but they decided to go with BPA over need. I'm always a BPA over need guy. So obviously I'm pretty happy with the overall draft. That's kind of a breakdown on the round one and round two implications for the Wizards. I do want to talk briefly about Middleton. I wasn't able to touch on it on the last pod. If you did miss it, Chris Middleton opted into $33 million player option. Again, this was an expected move. This was about a couple of days ago as well. So this is old news. But again, that's another roster spot now that gets taken up. This was expected. Middleton, you know, the Wizards were 6-8. They were, again, 6-8 isn't great, but they were 6-8 in the games that Middleton played with them last year. It's an improved record. Showed that he still has, you know, talent. I would expect him to start at the three or the four this upcoming season. Maybe they can deal him, but that's a hefty price at $33 million to be able to deal to an injury-prone 33-year-old. So again, will be tough. But another thing to note, there's some guarantee dates. And I'm going to do a full off-season show probably sometime later this week, really getting into the free agency guarantee dates and all that stuff coming up. But June 29th is the real big date to circle. Rashawn Holmes, who's supposed to get paid $12.8 million next year, only $250,000 of that is fully guaranteed. So the Wizards could basically, what that means is the Wizard can say, you know, here's your $250,000. We're not going to guarantee your contract by this date. We're going to just kind of let you walk in free agency. And they kind of did a similar thing last year where they renegotiated his contract to the current one. They basically said, all right, we'll guarantee you your salary for this year now, and we're going to add another clause that makes it only $250,000 guaranteed for the following year. And now we're at that point. So again, you know, they could use a guy like Holmes. He was pretty solid in his minutes, would be a nice backup complement to Sar down low. But again, if they do, maybe they'll renegotiate that, because while they do have the cap space, I think, you know, 12.8 is a little bit of a hefty price tag for Holmes's services next year. But that's something to note as well. Anthony Gill, you know, established veteran on this team for what feels like forever, the longest tenured Washington Wizard, is due $2.5 million for the next season, but zero of that, nothing is guaranteed. So again, they can let him walk for free if they decide to not guarantee that contract by the 29th. I also believe that Colby Jones doesn't have any guaranteed money in his $2.2 million rookie deal. But I think the day for that is pushed back to January 10th. So that's another thing to monitor with possible roster spots being open with Gill and Holmes, especially. The Wizards can kind of cut ties for free. And so, you know, if they're looking to free up some roster space, that's certainly a place that they can look. So now that we talked about that and the Middleton, the guarantees are out of the way, I can kind of talk about one of the other big questions that Wizards fans had for me during the draft. And that is about the roster. That's about how can they possibly, you know, roster all of these guards and all of these wings and find playing time at that for some of the odd men out, like an AJ Johnson. You know, even like a guy like Will Riley and Jameer Watkins, you know, are they going to be able to see the floor early on in their career? And I understand that. And I try to take a crack at predicting what I think the 18-man roster will look like. And again, a brief refresher before I get into my predictions. 15 players are allowed on standard NBA contracts in an, you know, opening night NBA roster. You are also allowed to have three players on two-way contracts, which means that they have a maximum of 50 games that they can play on the NBA roster. And while on a two-way deal, you're not eligible to play in the NBA playoffs. And when you're not with the Wizards, you're with the Capital City Go-Go getting reps in the G League. So that's kind of the overall breakdown of a two-way contract. There's also a 21-man limit, I believe, for the training camp. So you could see some of the undrafted free agents like a Kadarius Richardson, Kadarius Richmond, be on that Exhibit 10 training camp deal and not necessarily take up one of the 18-man roster spots. So that's a little bit of explainer. You know, you're probably sitting there saying, Greg, get into it. So I'm going to right now. This is the way that I see it in no particular order. Guards, Bob Carrington, CJ McCollum, Trey Johnson, Marcus Smart, AJ Johnson, Colby Jones, Jameer Watkins. Wings, Chris Middleton, Bilal Coulibaly, Keyshawn George, Justin Champagny, Corey Kispert, Will Riley. Forwards, Alex Sarr, Kelly Olynyk, Rashawn Holmes. And you're probably sitting there saying, well, Greg, where's Tristan Vukcevic? I also took the liberty, because I knew I'd get that question, to kind of say they have three two-way spots. Vukcevic was on one last year. He's a restricted free agent. I think bringing him back on another two-way deal would make sense. Again, I don't know if he's eligible. I know there are certain restrictions on two-way deals, But certainly if he is eligible, and I'll look more into that later, then I think that's a possible spot. A lot of second rounders as well get put on two-way deals. So it's possible that they sign Jahmyr Watkins to a two-way deal to at least begin his NBA career. If Richmond makes a good impression, it's possible he can get one of those spots too. But nonetheless, there's also the possibility of Anthony Gill and Rashawn Holmes, like I mentioned. But if you take away Holmes, Gill, Vukcevic, and all that stuff, you have seven guards in Carrington, McCollum, Johnson, Smart, Colby Jones, and Jahmyr Watkins. You have what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 wings, so that would be 13. And then with Sarr and Olynyk as your only forwards, that's 15. And then you got, you know, some fringe roster guys like Holmes and Gill, depending on if they let them walk or not. Vukcevic, in terms of do they bring him back on a two-way deal? Colby Jones, will they keep that guaranteed salary? So there are certainly a lot of question marks. There's obviously your roster locks, and I guess I can go through the roster locks real quick. Bob Garrington, CJ McCollum, Trey Johnson, Marcus Smart, AJ Johnson, Jahmyr Watkins, Chris Middleton, Bilal Coulibaly, Keyshawn George, Justin Champagne, Corey Kispert, Will Riley, and then Alex Sarr and Kelly Olynyk. The only guy I guess I didn't mention was Colby Jones. So, you know, there's certainly a lot of intrigue there. I'd say six guards are locks to be a part of the 18-man roster, including two ways. All six of the wings are locks, and Sarr and Olynyk as well. So that's kind of like an overview of the Wizards roster and some of the decisions they're going to need to make. Again, they have decisions on guarantee dates coming up in 3 days on the 29th on Gill, on players like Rashawn Holmes as well that could add good depth. But there also is the possibility, like I mentioned, that they can look to add a center on the open market. Like they have a lot of cap space, right? Like they do have $97 million invested into 4 30-plus-year-old veterans. That's not ideal when you're trying to build a roster. But nonetheless, like they signed Valanciunas last year. I don't know why they wouldn't look to maybe look into signing a center that maybe you can get on a cheap multi-year deal and flip the deadline. Here's some centers on the open market via my friend Bijan Tata Monumental. Brooke Lopez, Clint Capella, Miles Turner, Al Horford, Kevon Looney. Turner, again, isn't someone that I think would make too much sense here in Washington. Maybe not even a guy like Lopez. But older guys like Clint Capella, Al Horford, Kevon Looney, like maybe Washington looks to get them on a cheaper deal if nobody covets them too much in free agency and kind of pairs them with Sarr in the front court or has them backing up Sarr for most of the season unless they can find a deal for him. So again, I understand the issues there with the Wizards roster. You know, you have six plus guards, you have six plus wings, and you look at your front court and you have Sarr and you have Olynyk, but you're not necessarily sure if they bring back Gill or Holmes. You're not necessarily sure what they're going to do with Vukcevic. Like, they're not going to let him walk, but I don't know if he's going to be on the 15-man roster or, again, on a two-way deal. So there's certainly some question marks to be raised there. However, I don't think wasting a draft pick on a forward/center just because at this point in time you need them versus just drafting a player that you view as more talented probably on the board than somebody that was there and that was a forward/center. That's the better philosophy. Going for talent over fit, especially at this stage of the rebuild, is just something that I applaud the Wizards for doing. It's not easy to do, but they have their philosophy. They have their type of prospect, and it's pretty clear that Will Dawkins has been sticking to it. So, again, that is my thoughts on the roster, and I'll have more of a breakdown. I think my guy Matt Moderno is going to join me at some point in the coming week to break down some of the decisions the Wizards have. Maybe we'll go into depth with depth charts and stuff. But I like what the Wizards did here. It's clear that they have a draft philosophy. It's clear that they drafted guys that can play in multiple positions, guys that wanted to be here in Washington. And again, guys that can put the ball in the basket. They drafted guys that can score the ball. You know, Watkins more so known for his defense, but he is a capable scorer. Johnson, again, way more known for his offense and needs to get better at defense. Will Riley is a high upside wing that projects as a good, solid offensive player that can go get you a bucket. That's clearly what the approach was. The Wizards have struggled mightily on the offensive end, defensive end as well, but certainly on offense the last couple of years. They needed an influx of offensive talent and scoring in this draft. They added that with three players that can do that. So I'm very, very excited for that. I think they came away with a really good draft. I'm not going to come away here and glaze Will Dawkins by saying he hit a home run. Again, there are certain players, especially at 21, I mentioned this, that I would have probably targeted over Riley. But unlike some Wizards, you know, people, I can get behind the Riley pick. I know what Dawkins' philosophy is. I know what he's trying to do here. And so I can't be mad at it. I give it an A-. I have a tweet up asking you, you know, what you would give the draft. So you can comment what you would grade the Wizards draft below. You can also go to that tweet on my Twitter, read what other people are saying. You can comment your own thing. But it's certainly obvious that the Wizards are just looking to accumulate as much talent as they can. They don't care. You know, Will Dawkins can care less if you're out there and you're saying he only has, you know, Alex Saar and Kelly Olynyk, you know, completely rostered, guaranteed for next year in that front court. He could care less because he got three talented individuals that he thinks can thrive, you know, on a contending team. So, again, I like what the Wizards were able to do here in the draft. Certainly will be intriguing to see if they look to add a center in free agency. There are some names on the open market, maybe sign them to a nice cheap deal pair alongside Saar, because I do think Saar in the long run, same with Tristan Vukcevic, would be better in a spot at the four versus at the five. If you can add a five there, I think it opens up a lot for Saar. So I'd be intrigued to see what they do. Certainly makes free agency a lot more intriguing. But nonetheless, I think I'm going to wrap it up for this draft episode. Again, to recap, Washington, after taking Trey Johnson and Will Riley on night one, get back into the second round and select Jameer Watkins, a stout on-ball defender, high-character guy out of Florida State. Sign Kadari Richmond, a stat sheet stuffer, strong rebounder, playmaker that needs to get better at shooting, but certainly has the traits to be, you know, a good player, and I understand why they probably like Richmond as well. So again, that's going to do it for this episode. Hopefully you enjoyed all of the draft coverage. Hopefully you're enjoying the podcast, both on Apple and on YouTube. Certainly if you have any ideas on stuff, because after this and into free agency, it might be a dead period. So let me know some things that you want me to talk about, but that's going to wrap it up for this episode. An intriguing night for the Wizards, an intriguing draft for the Wizards. Another good one from Will Dawkins. Exciting things ahead. Be on the lookout for all of the free agency and contract stuff on the horizon. But again, that's going to wrap it up. Thanks for all your support during the draft. Go Wiz.